Pittsburgh Presbyterian newsletter in audio form for June 15th of 2023. I am joined today by my esteemed colleague, the Reverend Ralph Lowe. Hello. My name is Brian Wallace, and I am the acting head of staff, and Ralph is one of the associate ministers here. We're taking a break. For the last couple weeks in the newsletter, my articles have focused on back to the basics, looking at the who and the responsibilities and eventually the objectives of the presbytery, but we're coming up on Juneteenth, and we're taking a little break from that to talk about Juneteenth. And what I will start out by saying is that I don't know if I'd even heard of Juneteenth until the last couple of years. It's not specifically a liturgical holiday, but if we're honest, a lot of what we celebrate in our churches aren't specifically liturgical holidays. We have Thanksgiving services. That's not a liturgical holiday. We talk about 4th of July, Memorial Day. So Ralph and I thought it'd be good to kind of talk a little bit this morning about Juneteenth, why it matters, and I'm just going to say at the outset, why it matters to our predominantly white congregation. Yes, so yes, for yes. If you're listening to this as a person of color or your congregation is not predominantly white, you might be like, I don't need to hear this. Well, we understand that. Yes. But for a lot of you listening, you are in predominantly white congregations, so we want to talk a little about that. So
yeah, and I thought we'd start out this conversation, Brian, but just talking about, it was called General Order Number 3. It was an order given to the slaves in Texas. The Emancipation Proclamation was given in 1863. So in 1865, June 19th of 1865 is when this proclamation finally made it to Texas. Now, to be clear, there were still fighting going on. As a matter of fact, I read up that the last actual battles happened months before this proclamation was given by the general from the Union Army in Texas. So the General Order Number 3 states this: the people are informed that in accordance with the proclamation from the executive of the United States, all slaves are free. This involves an absolute equality of personal rights and rights of property between former masters and slaves, and the connection heretofore existing between them become that between employer and hired labor. The freed are advised to remain at their present homes and work for wages. They are informed that they will not be allowed to collect at military posts, and that they will not be supported in idleness either there nor elsewhere. So Brian, I thought we'd talk a little bit about what this meant. If a slave who was hearing this 2 years removed from the Emancipation Proclamation, and they're in hearing this for the first time from this Union general who was sent to enforce this proclamation, right? So just the fact, Brian, that it says at the very beginning, all slaves are free. Could you imagine what that felt like as a slave, right? To just have this person, this Union general, come and say, you're free. And these are the things you're going to do, and then the description of what that freedom actually means. Like, so remember, we're talking about chattel slavery here, where these individuals, black people, were property, and in this proclamation, this order, you go from being property to being paid for work, supposedly paid for work that you were going to be doing. It's significant, right? So I think the thing that you and I talked about before we came on is there's kind of three practical things we want to share with our predominantly white congregations. The first is celebrate, right? This is a significant piece of our history. I think, Brian, and someone's going to check us and probably email us, I think the last time we had a national holiday go into effect was Martin Luther King Day.
Okay.
I think in the 80s.
In the 80s, right? Because Reagan signed that.
Yes.
Sure, it came in
under
Reagan.
Yes. So this is a significant part of our history. So we should celebrate it. We should recognize that, hey, we had this horrible thing going on, and we're trying to correct it by saying it was wrong and slaves are free, right? So we should absolutely celebrate that. In addition to that, though, I think, you know, for those of us who are listening to who of the faith community, it's an opportunity to recognize that this thing did happen in our history, right? So the second thing you're not talking about was to commemorate. And commemorating means that, you know, this thing happened, so there had to be something that happened before and after. So when we celebrate things, and this is just human nature, we tend to celebrate the thing that's happened now and moving forward. We don't think about what happened in the past. So yeah. When you commemorate it, though, if you think about the plaques that you see, it commemorates the history behind and the understanding of why this event happened. So if you commemorate, I think it's important to recognize that, you know, chattel slavery existed in this country.
Yeah, Juneteenth was necessary for a reason.
Yes.
And what's the reason?
Yes. And what's the reason? And the last thing, Brian, and I'd love to hear your thoughts, is I think specifically for our communities of faith, we need to be able to lament mm-hmm. what that truly means for mm-hmm. society today, mm-hmm. right? And the effects of chattel slavery and its continued effects for all of us, white and black, today. Okay. So what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think I have two thoughts. I mean, I think one, very practically speaking, as the churches are gathering for worship on Sunday, this is a perfect opportunity, appropriate opportunity, to include this in your prayers of the people, mm-hmm. or, you know, mm-hmm. like that's a great moment to acknowledge, right, and to do those things, and to say, you know, tomorrow is Juneteenth, and on Juneteenth, we remember, right? It's the same thing we do with Veterans Day and Memorial Day weekend and all those things. Like in the prayers of the people, that's the window in which I think as pastors, we have an opportunity to acknowledge and to lift it up in prayer and do those things exactly that you said, right? Mm-hmm. Celebrate that we fixed it mm-hmm. in some way. So at least we got on the path to fixing mm-hmm. it. But remember why, mm-hmm. right? So kind of that's the practical piece. I think the challenge, right, is that no one that I know of denies that chattel slavery was a bad thing. Mm-hmm. The question and the phrase that you got to is like the enduring effect, its legacy, mm-hmm. its lasting legacy. And that's where the rub starts,
yeah.
right? That's where, like a lot of the contemporary debates that we hear about systemic racism mm-hmm. and book banning and things like this comes down to, well, that was a long time ago. Mm-hmm. We need to teach it, but we don't need to talk about its impact today. It doesn't have any impact today. Mm-hmm. Or does it, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's where, as pastors, like, there's a very fine line, if you listen to this, that as you present this on Sunday, some of you are already getting tense.
Right.
Listen to me.
Yes.
Because it's like, you're sitting there going, easy for you to say.
That's right.
Because you're not going to get the blowback.
That's right.
And so, and I appreciate that. But I think we do a disservice
yes.
in not acknowledging it. How hard you push it
yeah.
depends a lot on
your community.
Kind of the way that you're trying to lead yeah. your faith community,
yeah.
right?
So,
but I think at the very least, acknowledging it and celebrating it.
Yeah.
That's, I think, a critical window. And just saying, and examining the lasting effects. I do think it's critical, though, that we name it.
Yeah.
It's part of our worship on Sunday because it is a national holiday.
Oh, that is so great. So it just reminds me of, you know, when Jesus asked Peter, "Do you love me? Feed my sheep," right? And as you know, the reason why Jesus says that is there's a certain way sheep and then calves are fed. The calves can't chew on grass,
right?
They have to be fed milk, but there's still nourishment in the milk. There's still nourishment in the grass. So we have to know in our communities what nourishment is needed. There's still this thing that's needed to be talked about mm-hmm. and acknowledged, but we need to understand how that nourishment is given to those communities.
Yep.
So I love what you just said there, Brian. It's important. And I think to finish up a little bit here, I think there's some practical things you can do as individuals as well,
yes.
right? So one of the things, and this is not mine. I heard this a few years ago from Jamar Tisby, who did a series of specifically what predominantly white communities of faith and individuals can do to celebrate Juneteenth. And I remember his first sermon was about rest. And specifically, and I try to get the words right here, he said to ask yourselves as individuals, as white individuals, what can I do to support the rest Black people deserve, but are so often denied? And let me frame that. There is a constantness for Black individuals in a pressure of fighting systemic racism, you know, in society in all its forms, unconscious and conscious, right? So given an opportunity to people you have relationship with, Black people, to acknowledge that tension and say, and this is individual, so this is up to you. How can I provide rest? Jamar gave an example of a few colleagues of his who offered their actual space, their homes for an like a barbecue or a community event for a relationship they have with black individuals who just come together and rest that day, right? Or another day. He gave another example of another couple of his colleagues, you know, hey, can I buy your family dinner? Which sounds like, you know, you're giving me money, you know, because I'm in what I'll say to that is, you're not going to go find some random black person and say, hey,
right,
here's some dinner. But hopefully you have relationships in such that you can navigate and identify how you can support through rest with those individuals you have relationships with. And I think that is so key because it acknowledges two things. The first thing it acknowledges is that the fact that I recognize, I see you, that there is a struggle that exists for you that doesn't for me, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And in that struggle, I am hoping and praying that I can give you some little rest from that struggle because I see it and I identify it with you and I'm in it with you, right? I think those are two things that are really, really important. And it also dismisses this tension of, I think we get in America, James Baldwin would call it the dispassionate. I was recalling this earlier. You know, America is, you know, we are remote from, she is remote from chattel slavery. You know, it's like this thing out there. You said it earlier. You said it really well earlier, Brian. But, you know, and James Baldwin would say you need to be passionate all the time about the effects of slavery. And I think in a small way, when you acknowledge the rest, you're acknowledging and you're being passionate about the legacy of chattel slavery in this country. So that's just one practical thing I think would be important. Yeah. As individuals, Brian. So,
I think to close, I want to kind of go back to something that you and I have reiterated in conversations over and over again of like, why does this matter to the church? Why does it matter to discipleship? And I think especially, you know, in a lot of our communities that are very homogenous, mm-hmm. we can lose sight of the fact that to love your neighbor, which I'm pretty sure Jesus said that.
Pretty sure.
Right? I'm pretty sure it was a pretty important part of his teaching. Mm-hmm. To love your neighbor, you have to ask, who is my neighbor? Mm-hmm. Right? And your neighbor goes beyond just the people you are immediately familiar with. Mm-hmm. And as a nation, we need to own, as a community, as Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. as Pittsburgh Presbytery, that we are not all the same in yeah. race and ethnicity. And that has impacted the way we live our lives. That's and right. if we're going to fulfill God's commandment to love one another, mm-hmm. if we're going to be the beloved community, we need to be committed to understanding and taking seriously other people's experiences and not just our own.
Yeah, yes.
And as you were talking, I was thinking like Memorial Day is a big, big holiday for a lot of folks. Mm-hmm. And particularly for those of us who have veterans who mm-hmm. have served.
Yep.
Even if they did not lose their lives in service, right? Memorial Day still has significance for them. Juneteenth for some people would be a bigger deal, mm-hmm. particularly for families, you know, who can trace their descendants back.
That's right.
It's a big deal, and yeah. I think for us to raise our awareness, to put it before our congregations, and to figure out what we can do individually, is another way of taking our discipleship to the next level of saying, how are we going to show love for our brothers and sisters? So it is integrally connected to faith. I know sometimes people are like, oh, race is all about politics. No, it's not. Yeah. It is not about politics. It is about learning to love one another, to love your brothers and sisters in Christ.
Yeah. Well said, Brian. I really appreciate it. And if I could just end by saying happy Juneteenth to all
of you. Happy Juneteenth.
Celebrate in a wonderful and great way.
Thank you all.